Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to take complex research, break it down, and give you the key insights nice and quick.
That's the idea. You want the knowledge without getting buried in detail, and, well, that's what we aim for.
So today, we're digging into a thesis called Random Sorting Networks, the Directed Landscape, and Random Polynomials. Quite a title.
It is. And the first thing you probably wonder is, okay, what holds these quite different mathematical areas together? That's really the puzzle we're exploring today.
Absolutely. It looks like three separate fields. You've got random sorting networks, think efficient sorting, but with randomness involved.
Right.
Then there's last passage percolation and this a directed landscape idea, kind of about how things move or spread through, let's say, unpredictable spaces.
Mm.
And finally, random polynomials. So equations where the coefficients are random and we're interested in where the solutions, the roots end up.
Yeah. And the author points out, you know, these are often studied pretty independently. The thesis itself is structured that way in three parts. But the really exciting part, I think, is hunting for those connections, the unexpected links between them. So our plan is to pull out the main findings from each section and maybe hint at where these connections might lie.
Sounds good. Let's start with part one, random sorting networks. Now, a sorting network here isn't just like your computer sorting files, right?
No, not quite. It's a specific mathematical concept. It's defined as the shortest path in something called the Cayley graph of the symmetric group.
Okay, that sounds technical.
It is a bit, but you can think of it like a map of all the possible ways to shuffle a list of items. And we're looking for the most direct routes on that map to get to the perfectly sorted order.
Got it. And these sorting networks, they pop up elsewhere in math.
They do, surprisingly. They connect to things like Schubert calculus, which is about, well, counting geometric things in abstract spaces, and representation theory, which helps us understand algebraic structures. So even before adding randomness, they're already quite connected.
Right. So what happens when we make them random? Especially when we sort lots and lots of items, like as it gets large.
That's where some really interesting conjectures come in. One big one is the sine curve limit conjecture.
A sine curve. How does that come into play?
Well, imagine tracking one specific item as it moves through this random sorting process. The conjecture says if you watch its path and you sort of zoom out and rescale it, it starts to look like a sine wave. Not a perfect one, mind you. It'll have a random amplitude and phase, a random height and starting point. But the key thing is the maximum deviation from that kind of random sine waves gets smaller and smaller as that increases. It tends towards zero.
So randomness on the small scale leads to this large scale wave-like regularity.
Exactly. It's quite beautiful, really. It suggests a kind of hidden order.
The research also talks about the time-t permutation matrix and the Archimedean measure. Can you unpack those a bit?
Sure. The time permutation matrix is basically a snapshot. It tells you where every single item has moved to at a specific point in time, t, during the sorting.
Okay, like a progress report.
Kind of, yeah. Now, if you take that snapshot and represent it as a sort of probability distribution where things are likely to be, there's a theorem, the permutation matrix limit theorem.
And that says?
It says that as n gets large, this random distribution converges to something called the Archimedean measure.
Archimedean measure.
Yeah, it's a specific smooth distribution on a square. Think of it like projecting a uniform distribution from a sphere onto a flat plane. So again, the individual movements are random, but the overall picture at any given time becomes predictable and smooth.
Individual chaos, collective order. Interesting. And there's a link to TACEP mentioned.
Right, TACEP. Totally asymmetric, simple exclusion process. It's a model from physics, often used for particles hopping along a line in one direction. Again, they can't occupy the same spot.
Okay.
What's fascinating is that although the rules are different, random sorting networks and TACEP, they share a property. The average speeds of the particles or items behave very similarly in the long run.
Suggesting some deeper connection, a universality.
Precisely. It points towards some underlying universal principles governing these random systems.
Okay, so we've got sine waves, smooth distributions, connections to physics models like TACEP. Anything else key from part one?
Yeah, a few things. They mentioned stretchable sorting networks, another method for generating them, and also the idea of a local limit.
Meaning looking closely.
Exactly. Zooming in on a tiny patch of a huge random sorting network, the finding is that the behavior there, the local speed distribution, has nice properties. It's symmetric, stationary, doesn't change over time, and mixing.
Mixing means things become independent.
Roughly, yes.
Yeah.
Events happening far apart within that local view become less correlated. And this local behavior, intriguingly, is thought to connect to the directed landscape we'll discuss in part two.
Ah, okay, a link forming.
Yes, part I also brings in the Edelman-Green bejection. It's a clever mapping between sorting networks and Jung tableau.
Jung tableau, those grid things.
That's them. Used in representation theory. This connection lets researchers use tools from Jung tableau theory, like the tableau process, which is a type of random process, to study sorting networks. They use techniques like stochastic domination to prove limits exist.
And it all wraps up by confirming the Archimedean limit stuff again.
Pretty much. It reinforces the sine curve and permutation matrix limits, building this consistent picture of large-scale behavior.
Okay, let's move to part two then. Last passage, percolation and the directed landscape. Sounds like we're shifting focus.
We are. This part is more about how randomness accumulates, how optimal paths form in random environments.
Last passage percolation, like finding the slowest route through random traffic.
That's a decent analogy, yeah. Mm-hmm. Imagine a grid. Each point has a random value, maybe a delay. Last passage percolation is about finding the path between two points that maximizes the sum of those values, the longest or slowest path.
And this connects to the directed landscape.
Deeply. The directed landscape is thought to be the universal object that emerges when you look at these last passage percolation models on a large scale.
Universal. So it describes lots of different things. I saw mention of the Kardar-Parisi-Zhang or KPZ universality class.
Exactly. The KPZ class includes many different physical and mathematical systems, random growth, polymer models, traffic flow, and last passage percolation. They all seem to show the same kind of statistical fluctuations in scaling behavior when you zoom out.
Wow.
And the directed landscape is conjectured to be the central object describing this universal behavior. It's like the master blueprint for all these KPZ systems.
So understanding this landscape is key to understanding all those phenomena.
That's the hope, yes. It would be a major unification.
What about the airy line ensemble? How does that fit in?
The airy line ensemble is another important object appearing in random matrix theory. It's a collection of statistically interesting random paths. It's believed to be closely related to the directed landscape, perhaps describing its finer structure or certain cross-sections. The research also looks at Brownian last passage percolation, where the random values are tied to Brownian motion, that jiggling particle movement. The limit there is conjectured to be the airy sheet, like the line ensemble, but extended to a 2D surface.
And what are the key features of this directed landscape itself?
A crucial one is the metric composition property. It basically says that the best path from A to C has to go through the best intermediate point B. Makes intuitive sense, right?
Yeah, like the optimal route includes optimal subroutes.
Exactly. And the paths themselves, the geodesics, are expected to be holder 23 continuous.
Which means they're continuous, but still kind of jagged.
Yeah, they're not smooth, but they're not infinitely rough either. There's a specific mathematical measure of their roughness, that 23 exponent.
Okay. And what are melons? That word stood out.
Huh, yeah. In this context, melons refer to configurations of non-intersecting paths in Brownian motion that appear when you study these last passage problems. They help understand how different optimal paths might bundle together or avoid each other.
It's interesting. And there can be multiple optimal paths. Leftmost and rightmost ones.
Yes. Often there isn't just one unique best path, but potentially a whole collection of them. The research mentions leftmost and rightmost paths as ways to characterize this. And again, the metric composition law is highlighted as fundamental.
Okay. So part two gives us this picture of a universal random landscape, the directed landscape, governing how optimal paths behave in many random systems. Now, part three, random polynomials. Feels like a completely different direction.
It does. On the surface, we're shifting from paths and landscapes to equations. But remember, we're looking for hidden links. Part three is about the roots of polynomials, where the polynomial equals zero when the coefficients themselves are random numbers.
Right. So instead of random paths, random numbers in the equation itself, what happens to the roots? Do they form patterns?
They often do, surprisingly. A classic example mentioned is the Ketarik ensemble. Here, the coefficients are just standard random numbers, Gaussian ones. And the result is that as the polynomial gets longer, higher degree, the roots tend to cluster uniformly around the unit circle in the complex plane.
So random coefficients lead to roots neatly arranged on a circle.
Yeah, it's quite striking. Randomness in leads to order out, in a sense.
What about other types of random polynomials? Their research mentions Pritzker and Ramachandran's work.
Right, they looked at random orthogonal polynomials. These are built using a special set of polynomials that are orthogonal with respect to some underlying measure or weight function.
So it's more general.
Yes, because the distribution of the roots now depends on that underlying measure. It's not always the unit circle. Potential theory, which studies functions related to things like electric potential, comes into play here. Concepts like the capacity of a set help describe where the roots will end up.
And there are theorems about this.
Yes. Part 3 mentions theorems about the weak conversions of the root distributions. Basically, they give conditions on the random coefficients and the underlying measure that guarantee the roots will settle into a predictable distribution as the degree gets large. Tools like Cartan's estimate are used to prove these things.
Okay, so part 3 shows that random polynomials also exhibit this kind of asymptotic regularity, with roots clustering in predictable ways.
Exactly. Which brings us back to the big picture, connections and open problems. The author is upfront that these are distinct parts, but studying them together implies a search for deeper links.
And what are some of those potential links or open questions?
Well, there are specific conjectures mentioned, like about the halfway permutation matrix and sorting networks, or the fine details of the directed landscape. Could the fluctuations in sorting networks share statistical features with the landscape, or even with the root distributions? It's speculative but intriguing. And the thesis mentions plans for future work, trying to extend the directed landscape results to other models like exponential last passage interpolation or polynuclear growth, PNG. This points again towards that idea of universality.
So it's really about finding the common mathematical language or principles that might unite these seemingly separate worlds.
I think that's a great way to put it. It's exploring the potential for hidden unity in mathematics.
And for you listening, hopefully this deep dive gave you a solid overview. The key ideas from random sorting networks, the directed landscape, random polynomials, without getting totally bogged down.
Yeah, you've seen how these different areas use probability and analysis, revealing unexpected patterns and hinting at these really deep connections.
So maybe a final thought to leave you with. What other areas, maybe in math, maybe even in science, seem totally unrelated but might actually share deep underlying connections just waiting to be found?
It's a fascinating question. Thinking about those potential bridges, maybe digging into some of the references from this research, could be a starting point for your own exploration.
Definitely something to ponder. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Yes, thank you. Hope you found it insightful.